All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 14 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we're going to take a closer look at the very first anchor fact of history as we begin the study of the archaic world. We're going to go right to the beginning and find out more about this important event that marks the beginning of recorded history, and has to do with a character with a very strange name. His name is Menes / Narmer. So I'll explain why I write his name that particular way. It is a little bit of a curious thing, and I'll explain that. But we have a couple things to do before we get to next week's test. So just a reminder, next week is a test week. Tests come about every 6 weeks or so, but not necessarily, you know, on the dot. So we have about 6 of them per year. And so next week is a test week. And I need to prepare you a little bit more for that test by giving you a little bit of additional material. And part of the test that you're going to have at the end of next week, I'm going to show you right now. So we have kind of a two-part class today. I'm going to show you a component of our work to come. It's an exercise that we're going to do on a weekly basis, a review exercise that we're going to do on a weekly basis. And then after that, we're going to jump into the specifics of the Menes-Narmer story. And we'll probably repeat this procedure in a way on Monday, in the sense that I'm going to assign you an exercise and you're going to be ready to do it on Monday morning. And then again, we go back to Menes-Narmer. And then after that, it's going to be test prep. All right, so let me go ahead and share my screen with you here, and we'll take you through the components of what we're going to do today. Share my screen. Okay, so here is a page that you are going to receive as a handout on your class web page, and it obviously resembles the Portland chart / timeline that we have been working with all of this time. But the obvious difference is that much of the information is missing. And the purpose of this exercise, I've already filled in one of the entries, but for the heck of it, I'll just delete it for a second. This is called a facts practice sheet, and it's blank. There's a bunch of blank entries. And the whole point of this exercise is for you to fill in the blank entries. And it's called a facts practice because basically what you are doing is recalling basic facts. And in this particular case, they are anchor facts. So they are the most important ones of all for actually understanding the past. So this is a very important thing to do in the study of history. Many people, myself included, your parents probably included, have a fear of memorization exercises. Because they remember when they were kids and when I was a kid, that we had to memorize tons of junk. And I am not gonna pull any punches here. It was absolute junk. I could use meaner words to describe it, so I'm just gonna use the word junk. And we had to memorize lots of junk. And then we had to write tests. And then we promptly, and you wouldn't believe how fast we did it, promptly forgot everything that was on the test. And this is what was called, quote, education. And sadly, in many cases, it still is. And so in History at Our House, we do not learn junk. We learn the most important information possible. And it is important to memorize some of it. Memorization is a very powerful tool. It is essential to all learning. And it only has a bad name because people have made such terrible mistakes in terms of choosing what to memorize. But in this class, we're going to memorize the important stuff, and this is going to be our tool. It's called a facts practice. We're going to practice the facts until such time as basically they shoot out of your mind automatically. The associations that you're going to have, we call that kind of like when you hear one thing, you automatically think another thing. That's called an association. You are going to have those hardwired in your brain. And what's going to happen is the more that you learn, the more that history is basically going to be all inside your head. You're going to know the whole thing yourself. You're going to be a walking, talking encyclopedia of the past. And every time you go to learn something new, you'll already have a huge set of knowledge in your head that you can call upon to help you better understand whatever that new item is. And you will, of course, encounter a lot as you grow and you learn more. And in the end, you can have an enormous amount of useful knowledge and understanding of the world. And you don't have to be one of these people. Sadly, nowadays, you see, we, my generation and people older than you, we had to memorize junk. And then we forgot it, of course, because it was junk. And now, we don't know anything. So anytime we want to try to figure something else, something out, what we have to do is we have to Google it. Now, Googling things is a minefield, because when you Google something, you get an answer from the internet. And the problem with that is you don't know if the answer you're getting is true or false, because you don't know anything. So Googling is not that great. Facebooking is even worse. And all of these things that modern grown-ups do to kind of try to make up for the fact that they didn't really learn enough things about the world around them, they don't really work very well. And so I don't want you guys to be in that position when you grow up to have to struggle so much to figure out the world. You're going to know this stuff. It's going to be at your fingertips, as they say. And that will be a power that you have that your parents and I didn't have. So let's go ahead, and it's a very simple thing. This is going to be the sheet that you receive. I may change the formatting over time, because this is the first time I've produced a fax practice in this format. Okay, but for the time being, it's going to work like this unless I really see a terrible problem with it and then I update it. Okay, so what you've got is the part that you recognize is these kind of lines that which I've thickened, which represent our portal and chart of history. And then you have a bunch of dates, which are going to be your prompts. And next to those dates, or on some line pointing away from it, you're going to have a line that is basically a blank spot for you to write something down. Okay, and you're going to see different kinds of those lines. Some of them are dark. The ones that are colored are obviously pointing to or attached to a line. And therefore, your task is to label the line and what it means. So I'm just going to go ahead right here and start filling things in and get you guys to tell me what the answers are as well. So I'm going to go ahead and put this one right here as an example. Right, so on a fax practice, when you get a prompt that says 1492, especially on this Portland chart, you're going to write, bam, Columbus. You're going to write a short answer. You're going to write an easy answer. Of course, it's very important that what you understand by this answer is Christopher Columbus discovered America and brought European culture across the ocean here. You need to be able to explain that. But in your fax practice, you're just going to write a quick and short version of it. All right. So what is going to be our quick and short version for when we write out 476 AD? I'm just going to copy and paste here, right? But what are you going to quickly write in order to fill in this fax practice? What's the best thing to write? Real question here. Rosetta, go ahead.
Fall of Rome.
Fall of Rome. Okay, good. So I'm going to go ahead and substitute Fall of Rome. Okay, good. All right, now we got another one. Okay, and let's fill in some more over here. Okay, what are we going to write for 1776? Patrick?
Declaration of Independence.
You are welcome to do that. And like I said, you can have a shorter or a longer version depending on what you need. So maybe we'll put independence just as a single word, okay? You're allowed to do that on a fax practice, okay? All right, good. And then what are we going to write here? Very obvious and simple as well, circa 4 BC. Okay, Sigourney?
Jesus Christ.
Okay, there we go. And we can, in fact, practice is meant to be quick, so you can just write Jesus. I'm sure that everybody knows that that would be Jesus Christ. Okay, so then we have a slightly longer and harder one. It's a two-part one, right? 509, 508. What do you suppose would be the best thing to write there? So I'm going to have to take this over here and suggest, I'm going to cut and paste it and move it over here and then replace it. So Rosetta, what would you say?
Democracy Republic.
Okay, not bad. I'm going to say we need more. I'm going to say Athens Democracy. Okay, because we need to make sure that we keep these things straight in our head. And therefore, the second entry, Patrick, is going to be?
Roman Republic.
Rome Republic. Okay, there we go. Something like that. Okay, so we need that fact next to 509, 508. Now, it's always a little tricky which one is which, right? So you just have to keep it sorted out in your mind, because it's not, I suppose I could draw two different lines. Maybe I'll improve the facts practice and have two different lines so you know which one to write. Okay, so we got a couple more dates to fill in over here. And so since this is about your intellectual independence, I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste that. And what are you going to put up here, guys? Julia?
You are here.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, good one. So, or you could say, I am here. Something like that, right? Me, here, now. Okay, because you're a part of it, and you're the only reason we're doing this. So, to study history, it's you studying it. So go ahead and say it. It's me. I'm here. Okay. Now we need a couple more date entries. The one that we're going to be, you know, spending some time on in the next couple classes here is the subject of our lecture. I'm just going to go ahead and put it in here. Mene/Narmer. And I want you to write that in that specific way, which I'll explain later. And then we have one last one for 1799. Rosetta, what's that one?
1799. Is the Rosetta Stone?
I put you on the spot, didn't I? Rosetta, you're never going to get away from that one, Rosetta. If it's the Rosetta Stone, I'm going to be asking Rosetta. Okay, so Rosetta Stone is discovered, right? That is our bridge to the archaic past. Okay, very good. So now we have all of the dated facts on our facts practice, but you'll notice we have five other arrows, and they are to the cultures involved and the times or the what the line represents. So I'm just going to go ahead and do some quick, simple ones over here. So this one over here is America or United States. Okay. This one over here, the green is the central one, which is Europe. And this one over here is Egypt. Okay, so separate from us. All right, so that's what I would like you to label in terms of those lines, because I want you to show me that you understand that these colors are representative. So when you print out the facts practice, I hope you have a colored version of it, because that would be the best one for you to have. And then, help me out here. What are the two entries that I really would like you to have that are necessary to our portaland navigation from the fall of Rome to us here now? Julia, go ahead.
Dark Ages and Renaissance.
Perfect, right. That is what happened in between us and the classical, super important past. And we need to know that, because all of that knowledge got to us along a certain path. And that, as it turns out, has some huge consequences. So, there we go. Okay, so this is exactly what a completed facts practice would look like, assuming that your printing is done in Helvetica font. So since you guys will be writing it in person, it won't look exactly like this, but I hope that it's a good size for you. If there are issues in terms of it being too small or something or other, you let me know, okay? But basically, this is what a completed fax practice looks like. So how long do you think it will take you to fill it in, start to finish, if this is as much as you need to write? What do you suppose? I'm guessing maximum 3 minutes. What do you think? Is 3 minutes a good number? Because what we're going to do is, next week on Monday, we're going to have a fax practice, literally. And a fax practice is a timed exercise where you write it out pretty much as quickly as you can. No panic or anything. Just write the whole thing out from memory on a blank sheet. Okay, so let me know if you practice over the weekend. You can tell us in Monday's class, you can say, well, it took me about, 2 minutes, Mr. Powell. Or actually, I'm a really fast writer. It took me only a minute and 10 seconds. Something like that. Give me an indication on Monday if you practice this. So I'm going to send you a printout of this completed fax practice. We could call it the key, right? The answer key. And then an empty one. And then you should be printing out a whole bunch of copies of the empty one. And filling it in as often as you need. How often that is, I'm not sure. Okay, depends how many times you need to do it and how often you need to do it is just a matter of, well, is it automatic for you yet? How quickly can you do it is the measure. If it's difficult, then you need to do it pretty much every day until it becomes really easy. Okay? Any questions or comments about the fax practice before we now go over to talk about Mannes-Narmer, probably the first part of our discussion, which will take at least 2 classes. Okay, good. So like I said, look on the webpage. You're going to see an empty one of this. You're going to see a key, and that way you print them both off and you start practicing it. Okay, excellent. Well then, let's see. I'm just going to save this work that I did because I don't want it to disappear. Okay. And now I'm going to bring up... Nope, that's a harder fax practice for the older kids. Now I'm going to bring up this one. Okay. And so, we've had this picture. You may remember this picture kind of from the earlier version of the Anchor Fact timeline, because if you look at it, our picture on the Anchor Fact timeline kind of was a close-up of this particular figure, right? And again, if you remember from that boy standing in the temple, isn't it interesting how familiar this looks, right? How this character who features so strongly in this image is posed in the same way as in others. This palette, it's called a palette, so it's a flat stone surface, or a tablet as well as another name for it. Right, nowadays tablets are electronic, but tablets used to be stone tablets. And you would inscribe writing on it or a drawing of some sort and things like that. So this tablet was found in Egypt, and there are a few hieroglyphic inscriptions on it, and it is interpreted to belong to or to be concerning a pharaoh of ancient Egypt, which means a king. We'll talk about the name of a pharaoh. Whose name used to be thought to be Menes. So now we're going to get into the explanation of why when we think of circa 3000 BC, we think of a character named Mannes-Narmer. The first half of that name, Menes, comes through a very interesting source. It was the Greeks who called him Menes. So one of the reasons why we know about ancient Egypt, and one of the reasons why Europeans were excited to learn about ancient Egypt, was because the Greeks had invented history, and they themselves were interested in Egyptian history. So the first And one of the greatest historians of all time, a Greek historian named Herodotus, had a story in his history about a Egyptian pharaoh, the first of them, called Menes. So, for the longest time, people were interested in this character called Menes. And then, after the Rosetta Stone was discovered, and all of the long documents having to do with pharaohs of ancient Egypt were translated, and the historians really worked for many generations, literally, to sort out all of the documents and figure them out, they came to the conclusion that, well, the Greeks had perhaps their own version of the name of the character, but that in their reading of the documents, the Egyptians called him Narmer. And so ever since, you know, I've studied this story, I like to remember that the stories that the Greeks told, which came to them through the legends of the Egyptians. The Egyptians themselves didn't have history, but they had legends about the founder of Egypt. They called him Menes. And then later on, the scientific historians of Europe discovered that, well, probably his name was Narmer. Well, he's really one and the same person. And I think it's a good idea to remember him by both names. So that this character that we're going to be talking about, who is visible in the center of this palette here, he is who the character that the legends of ancient Egypt and that the Greek historians call Menes, and that the modern historians call Narmer. Okay? And so this tablet represents that thing which he famously accomplished. So looking at the Narmer palette is a little bit like a history through art exercise, right? We look at this imagery and we try to interpret what it's telling us about Menes Narmer's accomplishment. And if this was history through art, which in a way it is, it's ancient art, so I would say to you, of course, everybody, what do you think? Is there a main character in this particular work of art? And if so, who is it? Right? And, oh, by the way, let me explain one thing. The right-hand side is the other side of this. They are the same object, but this side is what you see when you flip it over. So this is one side of it, and then when you flip it over, you see this side, just in case. They're not two objects, just so you know. Okay? But basically, again, if I ask you the question, of course, who is the main character? And using just basic art principles, you could tell me. Right, Rosetta?
Menes Narmer.
Well, okay, right, but let's say you haven't been able to read this yet, because you don't know that it's...
The guy. Right? The guy with the palette? What do you call that? I don't know what you call it.
Oh, the guy with this large ice cream spoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, it's not an ice cream spoon, but I just, you know, I can't help myself. It's a club, right? Or a mace. We sometimes describe it as. Okay, so yeah, the guy with the club. I mean, and then we could talk about why, but it's pretty obvious why, right? He's a larger character than everybody else. He's in the center. He is dressed in a unique way. He has a unique gesture and posture. Hey, look at that. All of our art principles apply even to this ancient art form, right? And what among the things that you notice about this character would you say is the most intriguing or the most notable? If you look at him and you compare him to any other person that you've ever met, what about him says he's different? Julia?
His hat?
his hatch, right? I mean, how often do you see somebody dressed with a hat that looks like that? I describe it as a bowling pin hat because that's the best that I can do with it, which again is a little goofy seeming. But basically, you know, his hat looks like a bowling pin nowadays. So yeah, it's a very unusual hat. And so a hat is something that, we could say a headdress is something that would normally kind of figure in somebody's status or what, you know, how important they are, that sort of thing, right? So what we notice about this character, is that he's very large. He is standing and he is holding what we will seriously call now a club. And therefore, again, art appreciation analysis. What is he going to do with that club? What's he going to do with it? What do you do with a club, Patrick?
Hit the person.
Hit what person?
That person.
Well, okay, we need better than that, right?
That he's holding with the hand.
With his other hand. Yeah, a person that he's holding by the hair who is kneeling at his feet, right? So this person is on his knees. And really, when we think of that, it's really that whole expression, on your knees, really means that you are bowing down to somebody. You are submitting to somebody. They are more important than you, and you have to get on your knees. So yeah, this is a very basic symbol and it seems to be present in all cultures. So it's really become such a thing that everybody recognizes it. So you find this in Chinese culture, you find it in any culture, really. So he's on his knees, the main character has him by the hair, which is probably not very gentle or nice, and then he has a club raised up with his arm, and the natural thing to guess here is that he is going to swing down and strike this other person. And well, that's, you know, obviously kind of a violent sort of thing and quite unpleasant. So we're talking about, you know, him being a violent character. When we think about history, when we think about people like Napoleon, you know, who went and conquered Egypt, or we think about Manes and Armour, and we think about how, well, as rulers, they use force in order to achieve their goals. And so we're definitely seeing a conqueror, right? A violent, forceful person. And if we just focus for the time being today on the left-hand side of this, which I think is the front of the palette, what do you suppose this is down here? If you want, I can zoom. Why don't I go ahead and zoom a bit? So let me see what I can do about zooming. What do you think about this imagery as part of the palette? Rosetta, go ahead.
They seem to be running, or the people, they seem to be running or something.
Yeah, that's good, right? Because they do seem to be in stride. A person that's running has one arm up like this, one arm down, one leg forward, one leg back. Right? Yeah, absolutely. So they are in a running stance. We have to make some allowance for the fact that this is primitive art, right? So this is not going to be like our great artists who are able to show the body in such a perfect way. This is a decent, you know, way of showing on a slab like this, the characters who are running. And notice that they're looking back over their shoulder, kind of up towards the main character here. So what do you make of that? What would be kind of an interpretation for running, but not looking where you're running, looking back as you run? When would you ever do that? Patrick does this at the pool all the time when somebody's doing something to him. Julia?
When you're scared of whatever's behind you.
Yeah, exactly. When you're being chased or you're afraid of the thing that's behind you. So the reason you're running is not to get to something, but to get away from something. Right? So this, as we're going to see, kind of makes sense in terms of the overall artwork of this palette. We have a conqueror and he is forcing somebody to submit. And then we have other people who are running away from him. All right. I think we have time for another symbol here. And it's this other character who is accompanying, in effect, the large central character. Can anybody see anything about this character or make some guesses? I'm going to try to zoom a little bit more if that can help. There's our other character. Patrick, go ahead.
It does make sense that he's a boy, I believe.
Oh, okay. Now, why do you say that?
Well, because he looks small.
Okay. That's a good observation. This character is really large. This character is maybe, a similar size, but he's on his knees. This is a smaller person, it would seem. All right, so one interpretation would be he's a child. Okay, that's not too bad. Okay, that's definitely plausible. Okay, what else? Can you make out anything else? There's some interesting things here. I mean, for instance, this and this. I mean, even if you can't identify the objects particularly, can you give me a thought about what that might represent? Think about this character in relation to the main character. Why are these things shown? Well, I'll tell you what these are, almost certainly. These are sandals. A pair of sandals. Then over here, I suspect we have a vessel with some water in it. So what do you suppose that means? Rosetta, what's your guess?
They're near water. Probably the Nile River.
Oh, that's an interesting, that's quite a very symbolic interpretation. I'll actually have something else to show you about that next time. Julia, what's your, maybe a simpler interpretation?
Oh, well, this one isn't very simple, but maybe I was thinking that they're going somewhere or they came a long way to get there.
Okay, that's interesting. I think that's related to the basic interpretation, which is he's a servant. He's carrying these objects on behalf of the ruler, right? And it's very likely that he might be a child, right? Oftentimes a squire in medieval times or a character like that would be young, and he would be a servant of the main character. And so the point is, he carries things for him, we have to kind of think in terms of very basic symbols here. Nothing is all too complicated here. It's primitive art. And so we have a character who's just walking the same way as he is, in the same pose, but he's carrying objects. He's a servant who is helping the main character. All right, so we've come along here a good ways, and the thing that we're going to kind of talk about next time is this very unusual symbol. This is where we need your symbolic interpretations, guys. So we'll see what you guys can make of this part when we come back next week. That's going to be quite significant. And then we will transfer over to the other side of the palette. And we'll see that basically this is the beginning of the story and this is the end of the story. And if we can interpret the structure of the story, we'll understand how this captures this first historical event. All right, so we'll continue with that next week. Of course, tomorrow is History Through Art, but it's History Through Art using some kind of dramatic history painting. And following your preference, we'll go with something that's life or death. Rather than just recreational. All right, so thanks, guys. That'll do it for today. Please look for your facts practices on the class webpage and practice those and let me know how it's going. And then we'll reconvene next week and actually start preparing for the test. Okay, bye for now, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.